I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. We will be producing a new podcast episode once or twice per week to bring you the latest updates about how the COVID-19 pandemic is disrupting the lives and communities of southeastern Connecticut. In this episode, we hear from Dr. Peter Morgan, the chair of psychiatry at L&M Hospital. He talked to reporter Julia Bergman recently about the mental health needs of people in this time of crisis. And we'll hear from reporter Erica Moser about her recent reporting in an effort to better explain the science behind social distancing and some of the other recent recommendations by health experts. And we'll hear a bit of her interview with Ledge Light Health District Director Stephen Mansfield. First, Dr. Peter Morgan, Chair of Psychiatry at L&M Hospital. Reporter Julia Bergman asked Dr. Morgan about what steps L&M is taking to make more telehealth services available to their patients.
You know, with the COVID-19 outbreak, we want to ensure patient safety, and that means trying to keep people out of, you know, places where people congregate and keep people out of doctor's offices as much as possible. So one of the things that we've been doing across the health system and in particular in psychiatry is to make available telehealth services. So we have a capacity now to do visits through electronic media, so video conferencing between the therapist or provider and patient is up and running. And we had our first successful visit like that yesterday, and now that's just becoming the new normal for visits for patients that don't need for some other reason to come in and be seen face-to-face. The governor, I don't know if you know this, but just yesterday issued another order that lifting restrictions on billing so that hospitals can now and providers of all kinds can bill for telephone services where those are in place. So for patients who aren't able to access the video conferencing, you know, we're able to also, you know, provide sort of better service using just the telephone. Whereas before we were using the telephone really just for check-ins, now we're able to deliver care.
Dr. Morgan also talked about some of the concerns they're hearing from patients.
There's just so many things going on to be concerned about, and that just creates a much higher level of anxiety for everybody that affects all of us. And, you know, the people that I've seen and talked to and the patients that I have are, you know, certainly they're concerned about themselves, they're very concerned about loved ones, people that they're interacting with, particularly people who have elderly loved ones or people who are physically sick. You know, seem to be at more at risk for having, you know, bad outcomes from COVID-19. So there's, you know, general concern around that. And of course, our patients have been very cooperative, understanding and willing and interested in, you know, interacting with us more by the phone or through, you know, video conferencing techniques. Of course, a lot of people are starting to suffer financially. And you know that restaurants have now been closed down except for takeout service. So it's a huge impact on the service industry as well as other businesses. So that's, you know, that's a growing concern.
Julia asked if they've been seeing an increase in patients seeking mental health services or if they anticipate an increase.
I anticipate there will be. Right now, there's a little bit of a lull because what's happening is people are sort of staying in. People are not interacting, they're trying to see what they can do to keep themselves safe. And then as this progresses over time, I think there'll be a rebound where people who are in need help will start reaching out more.
Dr. Morgan shared some strategies for coping with anxiety and isolation.
There's, you know, a lot of important things to keep in mind. You know, one is that there's some things that we can control and some things that we can't. So the things that we can control, we try to exercise that control. And we try to distract ourselves from the things that we can't control or we don't know about. It's hard to be inside all of the time. And that's not necessary, you know. So getting outside, but doing it in a way that keeps social distance, you know, keeps you away from other people is a good thing. You know, going to the gym right now is not a possibility, but doing exercise at home or you know, in your neighborhood, you know, is certainly an option. Other things that I think about is limiting your exposure to the news. And that doesn't mean don't stay informed, you know, but what it means is sort of decide when are your regular times to get informed. Try to keep a regular schedule. So you may not be able to go into work, but even though you're home, keeping a regular schedule where you eat your meals at your set times more or less, and you maybe check in with the news, at set times. But then during the other times, think about what you can do for yourself. And sort of with no pressure, except to try to engage your mind and other things so that, we're not thinking about, this epidemic all the time. Because it's stressful enough, but it's more stressful if we worry about it all the time without allowing ourselves to be distracted.
Julia asked about suggestions for parents and how they might communicate with their children.
I think the most important thing for children is to see that the people who are taking care of them are doing well, doing okay. So trying to put on, a sense of normalcy or, even though it's not normal, things are okay and we're still going to do our regular things that we can do, find other regular things to do so that, children get into a rhythm with the situation as it is and they feel like the people around them are doing okay with it and are reassuring. So like, well, things are going to be like this for now, but they're going to be okay. And then, one day things are going to be back to normal. Like they were before. Taking that front is better than sharing your anxieties about what's going on. We all have anxieties and we want to deal with the anxieties, but probably better not to share those with younger children in particular and only share them to the degree that's helpful for cooperation from older children. There's a lot about the virus we still don't know, but what we do know is that it's a kind of virus like we've had before in the world. It's possible that it's more contagious or a little bit different than past coronaviruses, but things have worked out in the past. This just seems to be a bit worse in terms of how many people are being affected and how much of the world is being affected, but it's the kind of thing where, doing the precautions that we're all doing does make a big difference, and that's why it's important to do them, and that everybody just wants to stay healthy, not cause trouble for themselves or other people. And, being able to, stay focused on other things while we're going through this is a good way to get through it. And, modeling for kids is really important, no matter how old they are, modeling for other people. And so that's if I'm at home with a child, even an older child, I don't want the child to see me on the internet all day long looking for what's happening next and what's changing and what's going on. I want them to see me, gathering information appropriately and then going about my day, doing the other things that I want to do during the day.
Finally, Dr. Morgan shared some recommendations that people take care of their physical well-being, including making sure they get enough sleep.
Making sure that we, part of keeping a schedule also means keeping a good sleep schedule. And, we may have some opportunities. So, even though being home might mean not working, not getting paid, and there's stressors around that, trying to use that time for something that feels like it's helping you is really important for mental health. So knowing that I'm going to keep a good schedule and get enough time for sleep, I'm going to try to eat as healthy as I can. Maybe I'm going to cut back on things like caffeine or, things that I rely on when everything's busy and I'm working, but now I'm not able to. Those are things that if I make some effort to focus on those, it not only helps my physical health, but also helps my mental health. Anxiety is normal and we're all going to have it. So if you want to indulge your anxiety a bit to see where things are and know that having that, anxious feeling is just a normal part of, this is it's a serious situation. On the other hand, you want to, invest the time in that feels right for you, but then make sure there's enough time to put it aside and invest in yourself and other things.
So talk to me about your weekend story from this past weekend, your kind of explainer piece. What did you learn? Who did you talk to? And what kind of response you've seen from commenters or on social media?
Yeah, so we had decided last week when I was still in the office that it would be a good idea to have kind of this in-depth explainer piece about the science and the data behind why all of these decisions are being made. And part of that was something I'd kind of been batting around on my own. And I also did speak with someone who said that she said, I'm not a really a big news junkie, so maybe I missed it, but I haven't seen just a really good explanation of the science and why we're reacting this way. And I think I wanted to respond to a lot of some of the comments I'd been seeing online, that you have some people that are out there throwing out all these figures about, you know, this number of people die every year from the flu, and we've only had this many deaths so far from the coronavirus, or some people throw out numbers for H1N1 or Ebola. So part of it's not a fair comparison, because if you're looking at an outbreak that happened years ago and you have a total death count at the end of it, this is something, you know, we keep hearing it's only going to get worse. So you can't really,
it's just started.
You can't really compare the death count now. That's one issue. Another thing that I was hearing a lot, whether it was in our comments section or on social media, was this is an overreaction. And personally, I'm not sure how people thought that they were qualified to make that judgment.
Right.
Because for me, I think of our reporter, Karen Florin, who covers the courts. I remember when she was doing one of our live events one time, one thing that really struck me was she said, "I'm not an expert, but I'm an expert on finding the experts." And that's kind of how I like to think about things. I'm not an expert in, I mean, really anything, but for whatever story it is that I'm working on, I try and find who is. And so in this case, you want to be talking to epidemiologists, doctors, people who work in public health. And so my goal for this article was to explain, why is it that we're seeing these mass cancellations? And obviously that's been an evolution. I mean, starting with, you heard, you know, South by Southwest and then Coachella and March Madness, and then you're getting into school closures, and this article was even before the bar and restaurant closures were announced. So I wanted to get in, why are we reacting this way? And it was really a few things that I ended up were kind of my takeaways. One thing was that this is not the flu. So for people just saying, oh, it's just a bad cold, that's not true. There's some key differences between the flu. One is that the transmissibility is spread out a bit more. So for the coronavirus, it might take you, you know, 4 days to pass it along to someone, whereas for the flu, it might be 2. And so with the flu, the transmissibility is such a short period of time that social distancing does not have the same capacity to be as effective. It just, social distancing does not work the same way when you have that short period of transmissibility. And with coronavirus, you're looking at kind of a late onset of symptoms that from the point in which you are in contact with someone who is infected, you may not notice symptoms for 2 to 14 days. And that's quite a big range, which shows, again, how much we don't know. Or you might not notice symptoms at all. So that was one thing. The other thing is the estimated death rate, whereas for the flu, the mortality rate is about 0.1%. And the range of the mortality rate for COVID-19 has varied a lot, partially because if you are asymptomatic, if you don't have any symptoms, if you don't know you have it, you're not going to get tested. And even people who do have symptoms, if they're not quote unquote bad enough, will not be tested. So
we don't know the absolute number of people that are infected. We do know how many people are dying, but the rate is, you can't calculate the rate if you don't know. You can't calculate an accurate rate if you don't know how many people have been infected.
Yeah, but if you're looking at, as an example, just of what we've been hearing, Dr. Anthony Fauci, I'm not positive if I'm saying that right, Dr. Anthony Fauci is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and he had a much lower estimate than what we had heard before from the World Health Organization. What they've been putting out there is when they're looking at the percentage of deaths compared to overall confirmed cases, they're looking at 3.4%, whereas Dr. Anthony Fauci with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases was saying that it might be more like 1%, because there's so many cases that haven't been confirmed that are coronavirus cases. But even 1%, that's 10 times the flu rate.
Yeah. So they're using modeling to estimate how many people are potentially infected.
Yes.
Yeah. And like you said, 10 times as, the mortality rate is 10 times what we believe the regular flu, if you will, is. So who did you talk to help you kind of sort through all these questions? What experts did you talk to?
So I spoke with the two people at Ledge Light Health District. That's Director Stephen Mansfield and Deputy Director Jennifer Maggio. I went to Ledge Light Health District on Friday, and I was amazed. Thursday night, I emailed Steve Mansfield, the director, and was like, I know you must be insanely busy, but if you have just 10 minutes to give me a call tomorrow. And actually, he responded, and then he actually ended up calling me Thursday night and saying, actually, you know, this is something we were talking about doing, you know, submitting a piece to the day on this topic of, you know, the science, why are we reacting this way? We do have a little bit of time if you want to come in at 11:30 on Friday.
The bottom line are the facts, and people should be very cognizant, very aware that this is a serious public health issue, and it has the potential to significantly affect morbidity and mortality in our populations. As has been said again and again, and it's worth repeating, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And we know it's already happening in Connecticut. As Matt Carter, the state epidemiologist, said, you know, we should assume that there is sustained community transmission going on right now. We just haven't seen the cases yet. So from a public health perspective, the more people pay attention to it, the better. And I think this curve really is a great graphic representation of what you can do, you know, the hashtag flatten the curve now. It's really important for people to recognize that all of the steps that, for instance, the CIAC have taken, that Ledge Light Health District has been supportive of. We're supportive of closing the schools at this point in time. It's not premature, just because we don't have cases, it's not premature to start taking these community mitigation steps before we have a huge number of cases in our jurisdiction. And we think that's critically important. It's a difficult sell, if you will, to the public who and we absolutely understand that people are concerned with canceling things that are part of their routine, day-to-day activities, and they're used to certain things happening. So it's more than an inconvenience to do a lot of these things. Imagine what closing schools will do to families. It's a significant disruption in people's day-to-day routines. And we recognize that. But one of our jobs as a public health department is to put in place mechanisms that will reduce morbidity and mortality and will address all the factors that contribute to the exacerbation of a pandemic. That's our number one priority.
They talked to me a bit about the term that you may be hearing a lot called flattening the curve, which is the idea that if you're picturing any sort of bell curve, a parabola, that you have, if you have a really steep one and the peak, the apex of the number of cases will be very high up kind of on this chart and then way above what medical capacity is. Whereas if the apex is spread out more, if you take this curve and just spread it out, your goal is to have the peak number of cases within medical capacity. So that's another one of the big reasons for the reaction, is just trying to help doctors have the capacity.
So it's really about slowing down the spread of the virus. It's not so much that we're going to stop the spread of the virus. It's to slow down the spread of the virus so that our health systems can keep up with the needs of people that become severe.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it may at first sound counterintuitive to some people, because you may think of it like, well, we don't want this virus to go on even longer. But if you're having fewer people infected at a time, that's the better way to get medical care. Because I was reading some other articles, and someone in Italy had said that, you know, we could be reaching a point where we have to decide who to save. And I saw another article where a doctor was making a comparison of just a family, that if you're a family of four, you would and everyone gets the flu, you'd rather have one person at a time get the flu so that you don't have the entire household incapacitated and therefore unable to care for the sick children because the parents are sick. You'd rather have one person get sick at a time.
We don't know how long this is going
to... That is kind of the scary part.
This is the new reality. Yeah, how long we're going to have to deal with these what seem like inconveniences right now.
And I think that is a balance because on one hand, I want to be prepared for whatever will happen down the road. But on the other hand, it's a lot more nerve-wracking and anxiety-producing if you think about the idea that this could be weeks or months we're still dealing with this. And
right.
It makes me kind of think, okay, maybe I'll take it one day at a time. And this is a kind of a sad and very different analogy, but that's something people say about grief. Like when my dad died, people say, you know, take it one day at a time. And it sounds like a cliche on the surface, but cliches are born out of very real things.
Right.
So, and again, like when I was dealing with that grief, I did finally process, oh, this is what that means. This is what taking it one day at a time means. So sometimes I'm thinking at this point, maybe again, beyond kind of what would be the responsible planning, if I can wake up and say, today I am working from home and just look at the day that way instead of saying, I am working from home indefinitely and who knows when I'll get to do anything fun and social ever again. Yeah. Like it's a little scary when you put it that way.
Well, thank you, Erica, for joining
course.
Me.
Thanks for having me.
Because of the wide-ranging public health concerns over coronavirus and COVID-19, we have decided to make all of our related news freely available to everyone and not subject to our regular subscription paywall. As you can imagine, news gathering during a time of crisis can be very hard work and stressful. If you're not a current subscriber, you can support our work by subscribing at theday.com/subscribe. If you are a subscriber, we thank you.